This is Stateside. I'm Cynthia Canty. Today marks the 100th anniversary of the birth of Rosa Parks, small in stature, said by all who knew her to be quiet and humble, yet a woman who made a giant mark on the pages of American history. A woman hailed as a true icon of the civil rights movement. Here's Parks in an interview with the Academy Achievement in 1995, 10 years before her death, describing just what led to her arrest in 1955 in Montgomery, Alabama, heart of the South of Jim Crow laws.
Well, I was arrested on December 1st, 1955, for refusing to stand up on the orders of the bus driver after the white seats had been occupied in the front. And, of course, I was not in the front of the bus, as many people have ridden and spoken that I was, that I got on the bus and took a front seat, but I did not. I took a seat that was just back of where the white people were sitting. And in fact, the last seat, and the man was next to the window, and I took an aisle seat, and there were two women across. And we went on undisturbed until about the second or third stop, when some white people boarded the bus and left one man standing. And when the driver noticed him standing, he told us to stand up and let him have those seats. He referred to them as front seats. And when the other three people, after some hesitancy, stood up, he wanted to know if I was going to stand. I told him I was not, and he told me he would have me arrested. And I told him he may do that. And, of course, he did.
That deliberate, well-thought-out act of civil disobedience galvanized the struggle for civil rights, not only here in America, but around the world. A year later, in 1956, Rosa Parks and her husband Raymond moved to Detroit, and that's where she lived until her death in 2005. Let's take a closer look at the life and legacy of Rosa Parks as we welcome Wayne State University Professor of History Danielle McGuire, who joins us now from the Rosa Parks Celebration, the National Day of Courage, at the Henry Ford Museum in Dearborn. Welcome.
Thank you for having me.
Well, thinking back on this 100th birthday of Rosa Parks, can you give us your sense as a historian where this woman stands in American history?
Well, Rosa Parks has become an icon of American history, sainted and celebrated by almost everyone. The unfortunate thing is that we only remember a small portion of her life, you know, that moment in December of 1955 when she refuses to give up her seat to a white man on a segregated Montgomery bus. But she was so much more than that. And I think, you know, given the celebrations today at the Henry Ford Museum and all around the country in honor of her 100th birthday, we're learning a whole lot more about her.
Give us a bigger sense then of what's been overlooked, and you know, as we focus on that Montgomery bus in 1955, what more are we overlooking?
Well, leading up to the bus boycott, Rosa Parks was a seasoned activist. And we all know that she was secretary of the NAACP for a decade before the bus boycott, but that didn't mean that she filed papers away or just took notes. What it meant was that she was a detective for the NAACP, and her job was to interview victims of racial violence, to interview survivors of racial terrorism. And she did that very quietly, usually under the cover of darkness, at great risk for her own life. And she brought those testimonies back to the Montgomery chapter, where they then decided whether or not to pursue a protest or launch a campaign. Mm-hmm. And it's those campaigns that Rosa Parks helped to launch in the 1940s, particularly her work on a rape case of a black woman named Recy Taylor, that really allowed her to cut her political teeth and help her build relationships that built the infrastructure necessary to launch something as successful as the bus boycott.
So it seems to me, Danielle McGuire, that as we look at what was leading up to that moment in December 1955, she was the right person at the right time, wasn't she?
She was exactly the right person at exactly the right time. And Rosa Parks, you know, when she was arrested that day, she knew exactly what would happen to her, and she did it anyway. She knew that the arrest could trigger a beating, could mean that she would be killed in the custody of the police. I mean, this has happened before, and she had investigated those cases before, but she did it anyway. And, you know, we like to think of this being a spontaneous thing. Maybe she was too tired. None of that was true. She was ready for it, and when the opportunity presented itself, she seized it.
I did see some quote where she apparently was rather annoyed at that idea that
yes.
she was this tired seamstress who just didn't want to. She was too physically tired. She said, no, I was tired of being tired. That's
exactly.
a tough voice speaking, isn't it?
Yes, it is. And she carried that voice throughout her life, and she had courage throughout her life. I mean, it took courage to, you know, defy segregation. It took courage to protest police brutality in Detroit. It took courage to protest the war in Vietnam, which she did. It took courage to protest all of these things that she did throughout her 70 years as an activist.
And I think that's, as you say, that it isn't as if she did this deed in December of 1955 and then kind of went onto the shelf.
Right, and she could have. That's the thing.
Yeah.
She could have. You know, she was harassed. She had death threats hurled at her all the time in Montgomery, and she left, and she could have receded into the woodwork, you know? Mm-hmm. But she didn't. She continued to struggle for dignity and human equality.
What brought her to Detroit?
Well, her brother lived here, for one thing, and mostly she was pushed out of Montgomery. You know, the harassment started immediately after she waged her protests on the bus, and then death threats began. She actually petitioned the Montgomery Improvement Association's leaders, you know, Martin Luther King and others, for night watchmen at her home because she felt so threatened. And her brother was so worried that she'd be killed in Alabama that he urged her to come to Detroit. And she finally felt, you know, unsafe enough that she left.
I think for many people who might be listening to us, especially younger people, they would see a picture of her in the Free Press or the news at some event, and there'd be this little, tiny, grandmotherly-looking, gray-haired lady. But what was she really, really like? As people would encounter her, particularly not at some event or not at some opening, but in her day-to-day life and in working for Congressman Conyers and just living in Detroit, what kind of person was she?
Well, I never got to meet her, but from what I've heard from the people who did is that she was a quiet woman. She was very soft-spoken. She was very unassuming. She wasn't the kind of radical activist who shouts out from a rooftop, you know, their plans and their protests. She did her work very slowly, methodically, but she did it every single day. And, you know, most people who know what she did in Detroit would call her a revolutionary, a quiet revolutionary, yes. but a revolutionary. And I think that's the most important thing to remember about her, is that she, you know, you don't have to bang drums and launch, you know, a huge campaign. You can do this kind of work every single day over many days and months and years and make a serious change in America, the kind of change that the whole world is now honoring and celebrating.
As you study her life and her years here in Detroit after she left Montgomery, first, I guess it's a two-part question. Did she get the respect from other civil rights leaders that was owed to her? Meaning there were a lot of pretty powerful, manly personalities. Did they respect her as she deserved?
Well, you know, we have to remember that a lot of the male civil rights leaders were men of the time, mm-hmm. and they had their own gendered assumptions about women's roles in the world. And, you know, Martin Luther King not excluded in that sense. Black women who were involved in the civil rights movement talked about the sexism they encountered from those leaders, including Martin Luther King. I think Rosa Parks was denied the opportunity to really be the kind of leader that she was, particularly after the boycott began. Of course, you know, she ran E.D. Nixon's office in Montgomery, and she worked for him in so many different levels. And you know, he often said women's roles are in the kitchen, and she said, well, what about me? You know, you wouldn't get anything done with that if I was in the kitchen. So I think she got used to people treating her like...
Was she a little bit taken for granted, do you
oh,
think?
Oh, totally.
Yeah.
She was totally taken for granted, and I think not recognized for the work that she did over many, many years, and not recognized for the groundwork that she laid, the foundations that she laid, so that people like King could come along and then help to organize a campaign. You know, none of that would have been possible without the decades of activism that Rosa Parks put in first.
And then the other part of my question, do you feel that she was aware of her position as an icon?
Yeah, I'm confident that she was aware of it, and confident that she, in many ways, played to it. You know, she didn't spend a lot of time talking about her activism in Detroit. She didn't spend a whole lot of time talking about the other work she did, partly because she knew people just wanted to talk about the bus and, you know, her singular stand against segregation. And she catered to them. I don't know why exactly, but she did. And then she went about her work, you know, for dignity and justice. She's a fascinating woman, fascinating, courageous, bold, defiant, quiet, unassuming. You know, in some ways, she's a study of opposites, and yet she fundamentally transformed America.
We're talking with Danielle McGuire, who's an assistant professor of history at Wayne State University, on this 100th birthday of Rosa Parks. And as you have studied the civil rights movement, Danielle, what do you feel that, especially the youngsters of today, what can they take away, or all of us really, take away from the life of Rosa Parks?
We need to understand that Rosa Parks was a warrior for justice. Not one day, not one moment, not one time, but all the time. That whenever she encountered injustice, she spoke out about it. She did something about it. She asked questions. She criticized. She critiqued. You know, she got involved. And this is something we can do. She was just like us, an ordinary person with not a whole lot of resources, probably fewer resources than most of us, who had more strikes against her than most of us have today. And yet she was able to wage war, really, against white supremacy and inequality. And we can do that. That's something we can do easily, whether we're sitting in front of our computer or walking through the world. We can model her actions every day by having the courage to speak out against injustice.
And it is quite remarkable. I saw a quote from Congressman John Conyers that said, in all the years she worked for him and that he knew her, her voice was not raised. She was just kind of quietly present. Mm-hmm. So you don't have to foam at the mouth and
exactly.
And shout, right?
And, you know, in some ways, I think you can get more done that way. And she certainly would have been a surprise to some of her enemies. I mean, even people now who embrace her and embrace the idea of her would be surprised to know that, you know, as Jean Theo Harris, the author of a great new book about Rosa Parks, talks about that, you know, that her hero was Malcolm X and that she supported Black Power movements. I mean, this is really important to know about Rosa Parks, but she didn't, you know, pump her fist and wear black leather coats and wear berets and carry guns around threatening whitey. But she was in favor of, you know, Black Power. So, yeah, you can do this quietly and be really effective. I think that's what she teaches us.
She died in 2005. So in those years since, do you think that the civil rights struggle in America and really around the world, has it continued to progress, or would she be disappointed with where we are today?
I think that coming up in Alabama during the era of Jim Crow, she would recognize that we have made significant progress. She would recognize that. She would have to. But she would also see that we have significant work left to do, that we still have schools that are segregated and unequal, that we still have a problem with police brutality, that we still have a huge and growing problem that is mass incarceration, that you know, she would be very interested in the problem of human trafficking all around the world on a global level. She would be opposed to the wars that we're involved in and war everywhere. So I think that she would realize, you know, as other civil rights activists put it, that freedom is a constant struggle, that you know, it's a journey that we all have to participate in. And in some cases, it's not a journey that ends, but we can definitely make a difference by, you know, walking in her footsteps and working to make freedom more possible each day.
Professor Danielle McGuire from Wayne State University, author of the book At the Dark End of the Street, Black Women, Rape, and Resistance, A New History of the Civil Rights Movement from Rosa Parks to the Rise of Black Power. Thank you so much for talking with us today.
You're welcome. Thanks for having me.